Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up and don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting episode of American. Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with the coolest of co-hosts, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon. I am very, very excited. It is number one, Friday the 13th, and number two, on hold, we have a awesome guest. I'm very excited about it.
Yes, yes. We're going to have a great, great show today. We're also going to have James Lafferty, who is the press secretary to the House Majority Whip, if I put my teeth in correctly, Kevin McCarthy. And also joining us, we're going to have a conservative musician, Chris Holly. And matter of fact, he has appeared on stage with Mitt Romney. He has also appeared with Hootie and the Blowfish. He's been with Huckabee, Santorum, Herman Cain. So we're going to have ourselves lined up a really, really great show. But what we want to do, as we do every show we start off with, is a dedication to fallen military. And I've got a special one here I've picked out today. I don't think anyone except for Fox News really carried any information on this, which I find absolutely amazing, but goes to show how our lamestream media is. So let's go forward with the dedication, and then we'll bring our guests on. How's that sound?
Good. You want me to play the same background I did the last time?
I have it up. This is Air Force. We're doing this dedication to six Air Force men that were killed in a 1965 crash, and they have just finally come home and have been laid to rest. This is Dateline Fox News, July 9th this year. And it begins. It was Christmas Eve, 1965, when the Air Force plane, nicknamed Spooky, took off from Vietnam for a combat mission. The crew sent out a Mayday signal while flying over Laos, and after that, all contact was lost. 2 days of searches turned up nothing. For years, that was all the family knew about and what happened to the six airmen aboard the plane. Nearly 47 years after the plane went down during the combat mission, six airmen have received a burial with full military honors at Arlington National Cemetery. The burial comes after the recovery of the remains in 2010 and 2011 by joint U.S. search teams. Examiners relied on dental records, personal items recovered from the site, and circumstantial evidence to conclude that the recovered remains are representative of all six Air Force servicemen. We're having a little technical difficulty here with our co-hosts.
Well, the volume is giving me a difficult. Go ahead. This is a great story. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, the six Air Force servicemen are Colonel James Cristiano of Rochester, New York; Colonel Daryl B. Jeffords of Florence, South Carolina; Lieutenant Colonel Dennis L. Ellers of Cedar Rapids, Iowa; Chief Master Sergeant William K. Cowell of Glen Cove, New York; Chief Master Sergeant Arden K. Hassinger of Lebanon, Oregon; and Chief Master Sergeant Larry C. Thornton of Idaho Falls, Idaho. The Air Force gave all six posthumous promotions. Dribs and drabs of information came in over the years, and some family members heard rumors that loved ones had been seen alive. But mostly, it was the passage of time that led relatives to conclude their loved ones had perished. The sad part about her situation is for 7 years, we hoped he was alive, said Janine Jeffords, 86, at Temecula, California, whose husband Daryl was on board. Their son Terry was 16 years old when Jeffords died, and their daughter Daryl was 13. We hoped he was a prisoner. 7 years later, they released all the prisoners. The Air Force called me at 3 a.m. one morning and said, "We're sorry to tell you, but your husband is not among the prisoners." Ron Thornton, who now lives in Bozeman, Montana, remembers reacting to the news his father's plane had gone missing with the optimism of a sixth grader he was in 1965. At some point, he was just sure his father would come walking out of the jungle and back into his family's arms. "The world being the size it was, I just thought he'd been misplaced," Ron Thornton said. "I really believed they would find him." Weeks turned into months, months to years. The family kept his picture on the wall of their home in Great Falls, Montana, along with his medals. "Even now," he said, "he doesn't expect Monday's burial will completely erase the questions from his mind, given that there is no definitive DNA evidence of his father's remains. There will always be this little hint of doubt in the back of my mind," he said. "It would be nice if they would have had proof positive." Joseph Cristiano's wife, Josephine, took an especially active role in the search, according to her daughter, Elaine. Josephine Cristiano addressed Congress and a special session at the Paris Peace Talks, went to Thailand and Laos looking for information, and joined a family support group. She said her mother's greatest fear was that her father was captured, held prisoner, and died in captivity. The military will continue their search to the site to hopefully find more remains and artifacts. Lane Cristiano wrote in an email to the Associated Press, "The family still has questions, but we have to accept this as our closure." Dean Ellers remembered getting the news about his brother Dennis around Christmas time. "After weeks or so, you think maybe with the training and survival, you think they'd escape or get away from somebody. Then after a year or two, you thought they might be prisoners. Then after that, you don't give up hope, but you figure they probably died in the crash, you know, after 40-some years." He said the family still wonders what happened that night. The first joint U.S. leadership team did not visit the site until 1995 in the southern province of Savannakhet, which was heavily bombed during the war as it lay on the Ho Chi Minh supply route that supplied Vietnam communist guerrillas in southern Vietnam. A villager recalled seeing a two-propeller aircraft crash near the village. A second villager had found wreckage of it and took the team to the crash site. Cowell's family, after years of holding out hope, had him declared dead in 1977 for paper reasons, said his niece, Ann Familia. who described her uncle as a lifer. He loved it. He loved fine, she said. When the military called to tell her that her uncle's remains had been identified, it took me a while to process it, she said. I just don't think this day was going to come. I'm so grateful it has come, and he was able to be buried a hero on American soil. Hassinger's daughter, Robin Hobson, said she takes comfort in the fact that the remains were found near the wreckage of the plane, which she takes as evidence that the men died quickly and did not suffer. It's just a big relief he has come home. It's been a long time, and it's not now time for him to be home. Hobson, who was 8 when her father deployed. We know where he is at now. That is 6 heroic and honorable men of the U.S. Air Force who have finally come home to rest.
Wow, that story. That is something else.
Yeah, and it just goes to show the courage of the military men, not only them, but of their families also. It's important for us to remember that these people are at home, worrying and wondering and hoping one day. They know what the family will come home. What better way to say that? Can you agree?
Oh, it's, let me wipe back some of the tears. As we give each show dedication, they all have special meaning.
Harder. Yeah,
somebody,
it does.
You know, to a mother and father, friend, that person means everything to them. But in a special mission like this, especially God knows how long it took before we even acknowledged we were going into Laos, et cetera, for these people who never stopped loving those heroes.
Yeah, and we have to remember something very important. Out there, there are 83,000 missing in action men and women. The majority are from World War II. Think of that.
Yeah.
83,000 American families are still missing a loved one from military action, and they have not come home yet. And because of that, we have to take a small break. We're going to play Todd Allen Herndon, as we always do, in honor of these men and women. His song, My Name is America, because this song says it to the military and to all Americans. It cannot be even said any better than he has in this song. Here we go. Todd Allen Herndon, My Name is America. This is to the military men and women out there.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. My name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger. And I'll believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants, their vicious deeds. Become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up.
I love that song. I always got to mute my mic whenever it plays because I start singing it in the background.
Yeah, that's a great song, a great tribute to our troops. God, this is this is a special group, you know, missing in action that long. And, you know, we conservative primetime last week, they were excavating just south of Berlin, and they dug up a corpse which still had the dog tags wrapped around it. So these special people, our show dedication tonight, they're all great heroes. But for special people that are missing in action so long, just let them know here on Blog Talk Radio, Southern Sense, as well as Conservative Primetime, you've never, ever, ever been forgotten. And in a lot of ways today when you read this, I pictured these men getting off the airplane, running into the arms of their loved ones and their children, and the tears and the joy. It's not quite exactly what we all had hoped for. But you know what? It's what we – It's in many ways at this stage, based on what happened, the only way to welcome them home. And with that said, we'll pass it back to Annie. By the way, Annie, I don't know if you know this, but for one day, I think it was Wednesday, we were the number one show, most popular, overall BTR.
We topped everyone. We topped everyone on BTR on Tuesday, our Tuesday show.
No, on Wednesday, I think it was, we were on the front page. And I called this guy and said, why'd we disappear? And he's like, well, you guys were a featured show. I said, anyway, this guy may have all been calling. Anyway, but congratulations. Oh, you made it happen.
Thanks. Now, with that said, I'm going to bring on our first guest. We have two guests today. Our first guest is James Lafferty. He is the press secretary to the House Majority Whip, Representative Kevin McCarthy from California. Good afternoon, Mr. Lafferty. How are you today?
Hi, Annie. I am doing fine, and it is certainly an honor to be here today. And I really, that was very touching, the beginning of your show. I want to correct one thing. I'm not working for Kevin McCarthy. I worked several years ago for Congressman DeLay of Texas when he was the whip. And then I worked for Speaker Gingrich. But I am right now in the private sector. I've recently formed an organization, but I have not worked on the Hill since then.
Ah, I apologize, because I was looking at your LinkedIn biography, and maybe that's where I got it confused.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
What
I still
like
on the Hill
being
a lot.
Part of that group? What was it like being part of that group? Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt, but part of the group during the Contract of America, that was that's huge history.
It was, yes. It was a great time. And I had been a Reagan appointee as well. So I got to see a lot of good conservative policies in action. I wish that we had stuck with some of them. But, it was a great time. I was very impressed with the people I worked with in the Reagan administration, and also with the people who Speaker Gingrich brought to the Hill.
amazing about Newt is that you can dislike. There, obviously, with Newt, in some ways, you either hate him or you like him. It's very hard middle of the road. But there's not one person on the planet that would like to have his grasp on history and his speaking ability in front. He could go in front of homeless and communicate.
Yeah.
Newt has an amazing speaking ability. Since the days I've watched him on C-SPAN, that is just, I've always tried to. Even I know when he was up there with nobody, you did not outfox Newt Gingrich.
No, it was great. Like the senior staff meetings there were like lectures, like college lectures. And you would go prepared to listen and even have him ask you questions and things like that. So it was a final and a college lecture all put together. And
wow.
And it was a really good time to be there. I learned a lot.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had met Speaker Gingrich and I had interviewed him when he was here in South Carolina. We had the three tea parties helped host him coming down here to speak. It was Bluffton, Hilton Head, and Beaufort. And I'm the founder and webmaster for the Beaufort Tea Party. And as it was, I wrangled a private interview with him. But prior to the interview, we're all sitting down in this barbecue place, and you had the leaders of the Tea Party sitting together, and we're all talking and chatting and eating. He sat there. He listened. He didn't interject anything. He asked questions. And we were talking about the Agenda 21 coming through, and we've got the I-95 corridor, which is in some areas is some of the poorest areas of South Carolina, but they wanted to push this Agenda 21 in that area, and we were trying to stop the legislation. He was questioning us because he was not familiar, and he was learning, and saying, this is something I have to consider, help us advise, because if this is happening across America, this is something I should be concerned about. And
yeah.
he didn't tell us what to do or what his thoughts on the matter was. He was listening to us, and you can see his mind working. You can see he was actually trying to figure everything out and see how he could help.
Yeah. Conversations with him were an engagement. And as I said, you always had to be prepared to talk and defend and explain what it was that you were saying, more than with some other members who would simply swallow whole whatever you told them and not question it and then just go off and do what you told them. That was never the way that Gingrich operated. He was very critical. Critical of Republicans too, and he thought things through, and as you say, he was a sponge for information.
Yeah, it was then it was about 10 minutes later. My husband tried killing him.
All of us have had our moments, and you know there are things that he's done that I've been just sort of shocked at, but
I've got to tell you the story that my husband built the stage. And in the rush to put it up, he didn't set it up completely correctly. So, of course, Speaker Gingrich is not a tiny man, so it wasn't balanced properly. So he goes to climb onto the stage, and the whole thing starts to tilt. So we're all dancing with the other side. It was sitting on it, holding on it until he got center and we could anchor it.
Yeah.
So how did you, sir, how did you, if you don't mind me asking, how did you, like your very first step into the political field, and kind of tell us a little bit of how you got to that plateau. Like, you know, your very first position or your inclination, you know, I'd like to pursue this.
Yeah, I, of course, I came from a political family, a family of Democrats. And when I was in college, I just sort of got turned around and pushed in the right direction. And I came to Washington and I did some work for a PR firm. And represented some groups who were fighting environmentalists. And that sort of introduced me to the whole idea that not all government intervention is good. And I did this, I represented a couple of chemical companies for a while who had really serious problems with the EPA. And when President Reagan first ran in 76, I volunteered. And I had a sort of a hobby, and that was economics. I'm an English major, so I never really learned anything useful. And I went into it and did volunteer work on this economics shadow operation that the Reagan people set up. And of course, we know that he didn't succeed in 76, But I sort of kept in touch with all the people there. And then in 80, when we found out that he was going to run again, I became really active. And when he was elected, I became part of a team that was pushing the tax cuts in the Congress. And I was assigned to the staff of the Joint Economic Committee of Congress to a member. There was a senator from Iowa, Senator Roger Jepson. And I worked on that committee as the press secretary, excuse me, and that was my first real political job. I worked there, and then I worked. I went from there, and I worked in other parts of the Reagan administration. And then when President Bush came in, there was a brief period where I worked for him at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is sort of a conservative's hell. And did that for a while, and then left there and went into the private sector, and of course came back to work with Congressman DeLay, whom I had known for a while, and then Speaker Gingrich.
Now,
excuse me.
I don't know if you caught this in the news, but this just popped up today, where President Obama now wants to take the work out of the work to welfare program. Have you caught that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, I think he's already done that. And I'm just constantly appalled by what I see him doing. I was watching the news today and saw Biden speaking to the NAACP and saying that if Romney is elected, all of the advances that have been made in civil rights will be rolled back. What nonsense. I mean, you talk about scare politics. First of all, it shows that they have a very, very low estimation of the intelligence of the American people. Because no one, I don't see how anyone who has any intelligence or education could believe that just because Romney is in there, we're going to now go back to days of lynchings and beatings, which is exactly what he was saying. And I think that's hysterical.
It is. It absolutely floors me because they completely ignore the fact that the Republican Party has always been the party of equal opportunity, of the abolitionist, of freedom, compared to the Democratic Party, especially the Southern Democrat, which gave birth to the KKK. They completely ignore those facts.
Yeah.
And I watched Romney's speech with the NAACP, and I thought he did a smash-up job. And he stood there with such eloquence and style when they booed him about the Obamacare. And the way he responded to it, I thought was completely spot on.
I agree.
There was hardly a response. There was hardly anyone that was able to refute what he said.
Yeah, and it was it was respectful in that he said, you know, I know that we may differ on some of this, but give me a chance, and I will show you that you're going to do better under an approach to government and to governing, which is free and which encourages individual achievement and rewards it and things like that, and which basically just tries to stay out of the way of all these entrepreneurs and all this enterprise in our system.
You know, here's another thing, too, is that Biden is talking to these people as if the people in the audience are these gangbanger Negroes with their pants down to their booty. I mean, you're talking about very educated people. The only people who are in there listening, you don't have your average moron or, you know, those people who are in there are very smart black people. And there's a lot of whites in there, too. But it's almost as if he's talking so down to them. He's talking at a street corner with a bunch of Project Yo's or something. So whereas the fact of the matter is, the people that are there that have attended the last several days, the people who get the invitations when Biden or the president or the Republican nominee or whoever the nominee may be at the time, those are the elites of the NAACP. The last thing they need is some stupid person like Biden, who I can't stand to begin with, but, I mean, just sitting there talking down to them like that, like, what planet is he? I mean, who does he really think he's addressing? I would be insulted if I were these people. to listen to him talk that nonsense.
I just think it's an indication of how desperate they are. I mean, Biden's speech made Al Sharpton look like Bill Buckley, okay? And it was just very, very strange, and particularly for a vice president to say that the American government is going to melt down if Romney gets elected. I'm not a total fan of Romney. There are a lot of things that he's done that I don't like, but I think that that he's certainly going to be better than Obama and Biden.
Yeah, with that in mind, I want to bring in our next guest over here. And as I introduce him, I'm going to let this little clip introduce him to begin with. Here we go.
We need jobs, jobs, overturn Dodd-Frank, repeal Obamacare. America's not scared. We're the home of the free and the land of the brave. It's the one for you and me. And I believe, I believe, I believe in you and me. So vote, 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 vote November 6th.
Welcome aboard, Chris Holly, the musician and composer of that little ditty.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Greetings from Charleston, South Carolina.
is it sunny up there as it is sunny down here?
Yeah, it's humid up here as it is down there.
All right. Chris, you're on board with James Lafferty and my co-host, Cool Mike. James, do you think we can get Mitt Romney to use that song?
I'm sorry, can we get him to use what?
That song that Chris Holly just wrote?
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
I think the goal, I you guys were talking about Speaker Gingrich earlier, and, you know, just a little bit of background on what I've been up to since last August. I've had a great opportunity to be on the road with every single GOP presidential hopeful on the trail, town halls, thanks to, thanks to my Congressman Tim Scott here, who's the superstar freshman congressman from my District 1. And so he brought me in, and I had a great opportunity to sit down with Speaker Gingrich and his wife after a show at the Statilli. And one thing that I think people don't get with Speaker Gingrich is that he's much more personable than I think a lot of people think. He's a bully or he was this or that on this campaign, but he's definitely a much more personable, you know, to sit down and talk and listen to, you know, what you have to say. Even if we're talking about music or, you know, other things I do to make, you know, a living as a musician. And his wife, who I think is involved with youth music, you know, asks a lot of really, really good, you know, insightful questions. They're both very, very, very nice people. I think Speaker Gingrich got a little bit of a, you know, rough ride as being, you know, the bully of the campaign a little bit, just because he comes off sometimes a little harsh or a little smart.
Oh, he also corrects people. That bothers him. He corrected the guy from Texas when he stated something false about history. Well, you know what? If I'm on the stage and I'm saying something that isn't accurate and it is properly corrected, and, you know, I loved it when Newt was done. He just kind of stared at him eye to eye. And, I mean, how do you respond to that? But in many ways, I disagree with Newt on an awful lot of things, but I've always admired. He's not going to get walked on. And those type of candidates who are threats, you know, when you're a threat like Newt because you're smart, they kind of have to pull something from underneath you to bring you down. Because in a large sense, with very good candidates, Bill Clinton was like this too. You can't go toe-to-toe and slug it out as a politician because they're just too good at it. They're just, I mean, they are the cloned type of politician of today's day and age. You can put them in front of a TV camera. You put them in front of millionaires. Put them in front of middle class, homeless, bums, winos, doctors, and they can win the crowd over.
Yeah.
Don't meet a lot of politicians who can do that.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, and Newt certainly is able to do that. He's very, you know, very good on his feet.
Well, let me bring it back over to Romney. Recently, the Obama camp has been attacking him with Bain Capital and offshore accounts. But they leave out the fact that you've got someone like Debbie Wasserman Schultz who has blatantly offshore accounts, whereas Romney, his account, he's telling everyone, hey, listen, look at my tax return, and you see I did pay my tax liability on those accounts, legitimate investments. You know, how is he countering it the proper way, or do you think he should be doing something a little bit differently?
I don't think he's doing anything different. It's just that I think they're looking for issues that the American public may not have a good understanding of, and that are frankly sort of difficult to explain in a soundbite or some sort of quick interview. And they're trying to use that to confuse everyone. But I mean, are we to believe that no Democrats have ever had offshore accounts?
That's like telling you there's no clouds in the sky.
Yeah. Well,
and also back to the Bain thing he's completely being attacked, you know, as of last night, especially as a felon and just the nonsense to distract. But I mean, one thing that everybody's just totally lost focus on is the work that he did with Bain, with Staples, with Burger King, returning companies around where a lot of minorities, got jobs. Whether it's at Staples or Burger King, and he's a job creator, and was a job creator with Bain, which is a lot more than can be said for the current administration that's not creating a snail's pace type job growth and looks
right.
Looks at Staples jobs or Burger King jobs as a joke job, that's one of the best things that he did at Bain. And if he was still at Bain while the Olympics were being run by Governor Romney, then, he's a miracle worker if he could do two things at once, which he wasn't. But if that was the case and he was running Bain and, raping and pillaging companies and setting up the Olympics, then the guy is definitely can multitask beyond belief. But we know that.
Killing dogs. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
A lot of people forget that Bain did that. That while he was at Bain, he turned around Staples and some major companies that I shop at this week.
Yeah,
that are still around.
Yeah.
No, I'm just slightly younger than James here because the first primary I remember voting for was the one that Reagan lost back in '76. So you can basically gauge my age by that. But I remember the scandal, the horrendous scandal about the Olympics when they were going out to Salt Lake City. And that was the first time Romney's name ever became public. I didn't know who he was. I was living in New York. What did I care who was the governor in Massachusetts?
Mm-hmm.
When I saw what he did with the Olympics, I said, wow, this is a guy to watch. So I'd like to know how the heck he spent those 2 years concentrating on the Olympics, and he was able to run this company.
Exactly, right. That's
a joke, how could he do the two different things? And yes, his name was on there as sole shareholder and so forth. Someone's name had to be on it. Someone had to sign these accounting sheets and whatever for the SEC and whomever else. So yes, as the sole shareholder, it was his responsibility to do that. But it doesn't mean that the people that were managing the company in his absence, were telling him exactly what was going on.
Yeah. Well, I think that a lot of the people who are running the Democrat Party right now have never really had to run a company, so they don't understand the inner workings. And even if they do, they're just going to distort it and make it as difficult as possible for people to understand what really went on. The campaign, the deputy campaign director, say he had committed a felony and all this stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah, Cotter.
It's just every day, and I think I'm overexposed to it here because I live inside the Beltway, but they're so desperate, and they look for even the most desperate things to say, and that's what I saw all that as yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just throw mud at the wall type mentality, see what sticks.
Yeah.
And if they can get it thick, they're just running with it. And they've got us talking about it right now, so they've done something that they'd probably be pretty pleased about. Hey, we've changed the subject. Let's not worry about the jobs report that just came out last week. Let's talk about this. Felon, the horrible felon.
And the Republican Party hasn't done a very good job of keeping the everybody focused. I remember when I worked on the Hill during the Reagan years, they had something called the Misery Index. And they would take all these different economic factors and reports, and then once a month they'd publish this big misery index, which would show people standing in food kitchens and children starving and, people being cast out into the snow. And we haven't done any of that. I mean, we basically said, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. But we haven't elaborated and done all that we could do, I think, about just spelling out exactly how bad this economy is, that we're not going to know some of the effects of what he has done for another 50 years. But he has, when you talk about change, he certainly has delivered on that. There has been a big change.
No, I think that you hit it. You hit it exactly on the head. If they put back that misery index, and once a month we published it to show how many homeless veterans we have now compared to, say, under the Bush administration, how many are coming back unemployed, how many people have been losing their homes because of this banking debacle that was caused by the Democrats in Congress. If we did all that again, and then just show how many people have actually had a cut, have had a cut in their household income because of what's going on, I think we can probably just turn this nation around easily with just that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I agree.
Well, we got to keep in mind too that the Republican Party is a party, just like the it's like a cartel. And you know, if we are to put our trust, ultimately our trust in any political game has to be in We the People. And it doesn't matter if they have a D or an R next to their name. If they have We the People breathing down their throat at all times, that's the best kind of influence for any politician. You know, Ronald Reagan was one who warned. Although we know he was a politician and a good one, he spoke of hating politicians and
yeah.
not trusting them. Government is the problem. You know, there's nothing more scarier than somebody says, "I'm from the government. I'm here to help." And
yeah.
the bottom line is that. Even with as much as the GOP is controlled now, you know, by most of the fat cats, ultimately the political structure's still controlled by us. If we are active, if we are involved, the politicians are going to do what's going to get them reelected. But as long as we as people are complacent, I really think in a lot of ways, I don't know Mitt Romney very well, but I tend to think if the GOP had nominated a Bill Clinton, Reagan-type salesman, he'd probably be leading Obama by 100 points right now, because as bad as Obama is. But because we have Romney, I think it's more of a neck-and-neck type race. But I think what we overlook is the fact that Mitt Romney is very smart. He was born into a very fortunate situation. But he's not just been a rich, spoiled brat who sat and done nothing. He has always worked. He's been loyal to his wife. He's a good religious man. Is he perfect? Probably not. But the bottom line is, we're not even sure if this current guy is legally born here. I mean, that's
yeah.
water over the dam. I know that. But the bottom line is that I mean, when you say the lesser of the two evils, that's almost like comparing the Wicked Witch of the West to Glinda, the Good Witch, because there is nobody like Obama ever.
Yeah.
I mean, he is signing away our just absolutely everything that this country stands for.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
You're bringing me up into a whole other subject that I wanted that someone in the chat room asked me to talk about that I had already planned. Dick Morris did one of his lunch alerts on this, and I want to play Dick Morris. And you know what I love? I absolutely adore when we have someone that was a liberal. And all of a sudden, they've had that epiphany, and now they've become a conservative. So I want to sometimes just kiss Dick Morris on the lips. So he gets it right sometimes. So many
yeah,
times.
I don't think I want to, but that's
no. I'll pass.
Let me play this lunch alert from Dick Morris, and then I want to get some input. One of the things I always find is the Obama administration has this uncanny knack of always hitting us with something on Friday, and that way. The media doesn't really have enough time to react to it during the week. Here we go.
Gun control imposed by the United Nations. That's what we'll talk about today in the video. Have you noticed that Obama has not talked about gun control much in his 4 years as president? He's advocated every other liberal measure that's been kicking around, but he's quiet on the issue of gun control. Well, that's because he knows he couldn't get it passed. He knows he couldn't get a lot of Democrats to vote for it. So he and Hillary Clinton, on July 27th of this month, are going to sign a treaty in New York City, which will obligate the United States to participate in a global regime of gun control. We talk about it in our book, Screwed, and we give you the background on it. But when we wrote this, they hadn't set the date for signing the treaty. But please read all about it here, because this is going to be one of the big fights we're going to have to wage likely during the lame duck session of Congress. It's called the Arms Trade Treaty, the ATT. And again, what the UN always does is there's a theoretical upfront objective that they advertise, and then there's their real intent. The theoretical objective of the ATT is to stop, regulate the arms trade so that we don't have this constant trade in munitions and death going back and forth across national borders. Of course, this is ridiculous because most of the arms trade is by the governments, and this does nothing to regulate government arms trafficking, but it does regulate individual arms trafficking. So the ostensible purpose of it is really a fraud, a feint. The real purpose of this is that it will set up an international agency that will be in charge of controlling the flow of arms throughout the world. And while it will theoretically only have jurisdiction over arms flows across national borders, you know, like the Interstate Commerce Clause, we see how that can be expanded. And it really will have the authority to tell member nations to adopt policies within their own countries to facilitate regulation of flows across borders. And those could include and will include registration, and may well include bans on arms and handguns and all of that. Now, if this treaty is ratified by the Senate, it assumes parity with the Second Amendment. It's as if there is a new 27th or 28th amendment to the Constitution of this treaty, because the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution says treaties are the law of the land and cannot be overridden by acts of Congress or acts of the state legislature. In fact, even if we don't ratify the thing, but Obama signs it, under the Vienna Convention, we are obliged not to do anything to counter this treaty and while we're considering ratifying it. It's only if the president, a subsequent president, renounces the treaty, which he can't do after the Senate's confirmed it, but which he can before, that it's no longer binding on the United States. So, for those of us who value the Second Amendment right to bear arms, this is absolutely pivotal. What they're doing is they've changed the venue, but it's the same fight. So, please, this is going to come up for ratification in the fall. They're signing it on July 27th. We need a storm of protest relating to the signing of it. We have a petition on our site right next to, you can click on the link here to go to Hillary to oppose signing it. But please, this is something that's very, very important for all of us that value the Second Amendment and believe in it, that think that's what it says. Well, thanks very much for watching.
But what they're not telling you is that they're doing this just so that they can completely negate the Second Amendment. James, you go first.
No, I mean, it's alarming, and to hear judges who are going before the Senate for confirmation, to lower federal courts, even to the Supreme Court, say that they think foreign law and law outside the constitutional structure of this country can be considered or should be considered in rendering decisions. That's what I think drives a lot of the concerns about Sharia, and it's clearly that's what he's talking about here, signing agreements with the UN that nullifies our own constitution. I don't understand how it has gotten to this point.
It is. And you find judges that use foreign law in American courts and hold it above our own constitution and laws. Chris, what's your input?
Well, I think the bottom line is I think President Obama would love nothing more than to see the guns come out of everyone's hands in the United States. I think he's probably always had that belief, especially as a professor and in Chicago. And I think that, you know, that, I think that's is going to stem back to the Fast and Furious thing, where you hear some of the rumblings about, you know, some of the paperwork that's not come out. And I think ultimately, after this administration's done, and you know, X amount of years down the road, when everything starts to come out, I think you'll see a lot of inner workings of the ultimate goal is to, you know, create sort of all kinds of different uproars or different issues issues with gun control to ultimately, you know, repeal the Second Amendment. I think I would, even though he would never say it, obviously, in an election year in a million years, I firmly believe he would love nothing more than to, you know, have us like England or other countries where there's, you know, where there's total gun control. I firmly believe that. I mean, that's just in his makeup. I mean, it just, you could just, from where he comes from, his background, his education background, the people he was with and brought up with, I think that's the ultimate goal for the Obama administration, ultimately. I don't think it'll happen, but I think that's what his dream would be.
Yeah, I seem to agree with you on that one. We don't even know what's inside this treaty. They haven't published the entire thing yet. It was supposed to have been completed back in June. We can only suppose, and there's been rumblings and rumors, which would include a international gun registry. And I'm sorry, I do not want Al-Qaeda knowing what guns I have in my house and what the calibers and everything else are. Restrictions on...
go ahead, Annie, sorry.
Restrictions on certain types of ammunition. And once they know they restrict the ammunition, how are you going to have a workable weapon?
Yeah. It just becomes like ultimately we'll all be in single payer. It's the same concept. Let's just, you know, or let's just keep running different angles on this, and ultimately we'll get what we want. And that's, you know, literally it's trying all kinds of different angles to get to the same, you know, end point. And that's obvious what goes on with this administration all day long. I mean, and they're very smart with it. They're very clever with it at times. Very, very clever.
Yeah. Now I got a caller who I believe this is another BTR host here. Is this Dr. Jones? Area code 770. Hello, area code 770. You're on the air live with Southern Sense.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Here we go. Here we go. I have my phone on mute. Sorry. All right, I'm driving down the road.
What's your input?
Well, you know, I think, in all fairness to the UN, which I have no respect for at all, by the way, this seems like a situation. Hey, I'm on the phone. Okay, the situation that we find ourselves in is not as bad as Dick Morris is making it out to be. The Senate has to ratify this, and I don't think they will. I think it's a long shot that will occur. And what Obama does, if they don't ratify it, can be undone when Romney gets in later this November. And, you know, in terms of the UN having authority over whether we have guns in our homes or what types of guns, Americans, you know, the American government may feel obliged to respect that, but does anyone believe that we Americans will respect that? I mean, you can't get criminals to respect gun laws. Law-abiding citizens, we're not going to do it either. It's inherently part of our rights as a nation to be able to carry or have weapons in our homes if, in fact, we're not convicted felons. And that right's not going to be taken away simply because the president signs a piece of paper.
Well, James, do you think our rights under the Second Amendment are at risk with this treaty, even if it's not ratified by the Senate?
No, I think I agree pretty much that unless it gets ratified, it's not going to cause that much. But you know what this is an effort to dumb down the debate so that at some point we'll be grateful that they're not only taking some of our guns, not all of our guns. And
exactly.
That's what's going on here. This is an effort to wear us down. And we've got to, every time this pops up, we have just got to shout and be very definite that this is unacceptable, that Americans who know the Constitution know that this is counter to the Constitution, and that we're going to fight it with every bit of energy we have.
Yes.
And
That's one of the problems that we haven't. And, you know, Ronald Reagan made the statement, those who have the most to lose usually care the least, and that's so true. I mean, basically they were putting Japanese Americans in concentration camps. They did prohibition. we had to turn on our gold, and we as people just took it. And it's like I have to disagree with Doc Jones. We never thought Obamacare would make it this far. We always thought somewhere along the line it's time for we the people to not really cheer on Scott Walker and the Republicans or cheer on whoever in the Democrats. It's time for we the people to administer the Constitution back by putting so much pressure on these politicians of both parties to the point as they toss and turn at night thinking, I got to get the hell out of this job. These people are just that's exactly it. I mean, we have become so complacent. Judge Napolitano, who I just love, made a comment when Thomas Jefferson was walking around talking to people about the Declaration of Independence. A third of the people were pissed off at him because they still wanted to remain under the king. Those would be the people I would assume are Democrats today. He said a third of the people really didn't even care. He said, but the other third really did. And that has to be us. That has to be the people. Who in the hell is Hillary Clinton? I mean, to speak on our behalf, that is absolutely insulting. I mean, that this woman, not to mention, the other thing I was going to talk about is that the United Nations has begun legislation. They want world control. They want to be the world police on the Internet. They're going to help take all this problem away from all the other countries, and they're going to be the police of the Internet. Isn't that nice of them? Who in the hell is the UN to even begin with? I mean, they've really accomplished very little in life positive compared to the negatives, and they're very corrupt monetarily. Go ahead, Danny.
Well, you got to also remember that the UN just put Iran on the Small Arms Treaty Committee. Hello? That's putting the fox in charge of the hen house.
Well, let them go into Egypt and those Middle Eastern countries and say, we're here to disarm you. We're from the UN. Let's have them do that. That'll really work out well. My money's on the Muslims.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why November 6th is even if some people are a little lukewarm to Romney or they're Ron Paul supporters or they loved Speaker Gingrich, I think November 6th is just so important to at least take that big shot across the bow to get things sort of back, to definitely get things back on track. Not even sort of back on track, just get things back on track. I've had the opportunity to work with Governor Romney, warming up, stumping on with him, warming up crowds, and had a chance to talk to him and talk to his wife, some of the team that's around him, and people just need to get behind him and get him elected November 6th. It's really important. It will definitely be a turn a million times better in the right direction, even if some people are a little worried about some of the stuff in his past or Romney Care or blah, blah, blah. I think he will listen to the will of the people much greater than what's been going on for almost 4 years now, which has been a total disaster.
Something that's never even talked about, too, with Mitt Romney is that it's always talked about how he slashed this company or cut it in half, this and that. He's also protected a lot of people who are in organized labor with their companies. When he left, instead of them going fully collapsed, they had less employees, but it was functioning. And, would we rather see a company, with half the staff or maybe 80% of what was there and the company still open, or would we rather see 100% of those people on unemployment or out of work, period? I mean, those are very tough jobs to be in, is when you are in charge of a company and need to rebuild it, because basically what they're saying is prevent us from collapsing. They're not saying,
right.
Go ahead.
Those are the tough choices you have to make. My father worked for General Electric and an executive for GE for 33 years before he passed away in the early 90s. And he ran the appliance factories for General Electric when they still made everything in the United States. And, I can remember being, a young man and he coming to me and saying, tomorrow morning you'll see a press release come out that we're going to have to lay off 10,000 people at, X amount of factories, at the refrigerator factories. It's would break his heart to have to sort of be the spokesperson for General Electric, to have to be part of that decision making. But that's the only way sometimes you can keep
you know, these companies afloat is sometimes you have to make those tough choices and lay people off or restructure, as what Bain did at times, and come in and make things work. That's just business. I'm a small business owner. I have 17 employees here in Charleston. And, you know, you got to meet a bottom line. I don't have an open checkbook just like the government to just, you know, fund whatever I want and, oh, well, give me another million for this or 10 million for that. I've got to pay the bills, keep the lights on, keep these people fed, and keep the paychecks going out. And that's what Romney can bring to the table. And that's, you know, what Obama's brought nothing to the table. He's a college professor. And no offense to college professors, but that's it.
I got to ask our musician, what did he think of the line when Nancy Pelosi said, we need to pass Obamacare, so if you want to go out and be a musician, you can.
I started working at 8 o'clock this morning. I work 10-hour days as a musician, whether I'm teaching or performing or out on the trail helping them, you know, support the GOP. I'd like to sit at home and sort of stare out the window and take photographs and daydream, but that's not going to feed my child and keep the business afloat. So, I mean, it's just la-la land. I came out of Los Angeles, that music scene, and the California crowd, they kind of get, you know, they just get off into outer space sometimes. And it's a nice thought. I would love to have just free load of money coming in and just kind of do whatever, but that's not the reality of how life works at all. It would be nice, but that's just, you know, that's just not true, and that's ridiculous. I totally remember when she said that. I just completely fell on my chair laughing. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I've got a caller on hold, another BGAR host. He's been waving his hand at me, asking me to bring him on. Thomas Smith, you have a quick question here, Thomas?
Actually, I just have a comment. And James, you may know the individual I'm about to mention because she worked in the State Department in the Reagan administration. But my friend Doria Novak is running for the 2nd Congressional District for Congress in Connecticut. And I had called her sometime a few weeks ago, almost in tears, because I had heard about the UN Small Arms Treaty, and I was angry. I mean, literally wanting to punch a hole in my TV angry. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, Thomas, first of all, there are things in place that we can do to override this treaty. And I was like, Daria, how do you know this? She's like, I worked for the State Department. I know what we're capable of doing. And then she went on to mention something interesting to me. She said, Dick Morris is playing it the way he is because he knows that as conservatives, we need to stay engaged. We cannot let people get apathetic. So I was wondering if you kind of felt that same way, or if you knew of any other ways around, because she was giving me indications that even despite what the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution says, there are tactics in place that we can utilize when any type of treaty tries to tread on the sovereignty of our Constitution. So can you speak to that?
No, I agree with her. I mean, I think you make a really important point, though, about her. Is she running for Congress in Connecticut?
Yeah, I believe that's what Thomas, she's running in the 2nd District, Thomas?
2nd District in Connecticut, yes.
Okay. It's important, particularly in the Senate, that we build a stronger conservative majority there.
Right.
Because the Senate is key in approving judges, and if we can get the Senate and House working together, there are a lot of things that we could do should, God forbid, there be another Obama administration. And it's just really important that we focus on the Senate races and some of the House races. Here in Virginia, George Allen is running for the Senate, and he is a lot better than his opponent, Tim Kaine, the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee. And we just need to pay attention. It's not just the presidential race, although the presidential race is very important. It's important to get the Senate, a really strong conservative majority in the Senate, and it's important to get even more conservatives into the House, and they can back check all that. I think, I mean, we've been talking about this. People just have no idea how bad it's gotten. My wife did a study on the National Institutes for Health, and they give these grants for studies of behavioral studies. And she showed me one the other night, and it started out with very little is known about college drinking. Well, I mean, how much do we need to know? Anybody who's seen Animal House knows that it goes on, okay? But it was an $800,000 grant to study the habits of freshman students on Saturday nights. I mean, come on. You know.
Give cocaine to monkeys. Study they did at Duke or somewhere. Let's give cocaine to monkeys and see what it does to them.
Well, it sounds like a bunch of horny old professors who are bored with their Saturday nights and want to find a way into it.
Didn't we send money over to China so they can study prostitution?
Yeah, yeah.
Chinese prostitution. Yeah, why not? Throw our tax dollars away.
They did. There was one study about lot lizards, about why are there prostitutes at truck stops. I mean, let's think about it for at least a second.
Customers?
Yeah. So government is still wasting.
I hate to interrupt really quickly. I actually have to go make some more money for Obamacare really quick. I have to go back and do some more work and get some more funds into the pool for Obamacare. I've got to go earn some more taxes. So I appreciate everybody having me on. Please check me out at chrishollymusic.com. I'll be hopefully be in Tampa, I think, at the convention doing some stuff and working with the GOP and hopefully get back out on the trail with Governor Romney. And everybody just needs to vote for him November 6th. And also check out my video for Governor Romney on YouTube that's gone viral very quickly, including MoveOn.org has attacked me, and a couple other people are starting to attack me. So that means I must have done something right, because now the left is upset. So everybody
Chris,
have a good afternoon.
You're coming back on. You're coming back on, I believe.
Yeah, I'll call you, and we'll definitely get that all set up. And I will definitely want to talk to everybody and keep everybody abreast of some other stuff I have coming up on the campaign trail. So everybody have a good weekend, and like I said, I'm going to go earn some more tax dollars for Nancy Pelosi's cause of Obamacare for arts. All right, everybody
Thanks,
have a great
ladies
day.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris. It's Chris Holly. Thanks for coming in. James, you brought up a great point. You brought up a very good point, and this is how waste and stupidity go together. The old saying, "A fool and his money soon part." But is it really worth $5 to study the drinking of college kids on weekends? I mean, we know they love noon on Fridays. Is it because what's one of the major reasons? Well, number one is they obviously get to drink, and number two, they're hoping to get lucky, or if they haven't already. But, I mean, the bottom line is when a study like this is brought to people, you need 100% of the people to say, what a waste. This is stupid. We don't even care about the results. Then maybe these people will stop to think about before they even allocate any type of funds there.
Yeah.
I mean, government waste is beyond government waste. And if you really think about it, too, university waste, in many aspects, a lot of that money is our tax-funded money.
Yeah.
State universities and colleges are basically they are funded a lot through the taxpayers.
Yeah. But a lot of this grant money is funding the left. I mean, a lot of it is the lifeblood of all these various leftist causes that all of us spend so much time fighting. And if we were able to stop government from bankrolling a lot of the activities of the left, this would be a much better place.
Well, you know, do you remember that commercial? He has not been on the air for a while, but the guy had the suit on with all the question marks on it, free government money.
Yeah.
And he used to drive me up the wall. I said, it's not free money. That's my tax dollars you're giving away.
Yeah.
And they had this thick book that was as thick as the New York City phone book. I'm like, how many programs are out there?
Yeah.
And the funniest part was he was selling the book and making a profit on it, probably off of a government grant.
I'm sure.
I want to change the subject just a little bit, because we started talking about Iran and then we got off the subject. Foreign Affairs just had an article in there, and it blew my mind that they were proponents for having a nuclear Iran. And I was listening to this, and I'm trying to remember the name of the general that is a Fox News contributor. I believe it's Hunt.
Yeah.
Hunt. And he was perfect in answering. He said, they're nuts. They are absolutely nuts. All they're doing is giving Israel an excuse to attack. Would you agree, James?
No, I do agree. I mean, I think if I were living in Israel right now with Barack Obama as the supposed leader of the free world, I'd be very concerned. I'd be very concerned.
Yeah,
and
now
I don't know what I just don't know how they stay calm.
It's amazing. I would have thought by now they would have taken action with Netanyahu out there. And actually, we're sending drones into the Strait of Hormuz to take out their mines. So I'm thinking that something is going to happen real soon. And I think this Foreign Affairs article was a shot across the bow, basically to help push whatever program Obama has working that he's not really telling us about.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he tells us very little. And what we hear, particularly about his views about Israel, it's not good news. And I don't know. I mean, my hope is that it can all just sort of stay in a freeze frame until November. But it that's unlikely.
No, I think he's maneuvering for something to give himself a push in the poll. And unfortunately, he's going to do it on the backs of innocent people and our military. And
yeah.
They're going to be sacrificing themselves in the holy grail of Obama, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it is obvious what his opinion is of Israel since he wanted it back to the, what was the 1964 boundaries, which
That's
blew
right.
my mind.
Yeah.
And in this article, their excuse was saying that, well, no power has used a nuclear weapon in, what was it, 47 years? I forget how many years it was, 60-something years since the last use of a nuclear weapon, and it was the United States that used it, blah, blah, blah. So no sane country will ever use the nuclear weapon, so why not let them have it? But hello, Iran is not a sane country. Why are you going to give a rogue nation that not pick what they will do a weapon? And
It's the policy equivalent of pointing the gun at your head to see if it's loaded. And doesn't work.
Go ahead, James.
No, it just doesn't work. And as you say, Iran is the most unstable country among a whole bunch of unstable countries in the Middle East, and the only stable country being Israel.
Well, and they also have a ruthless dictator. You saw what happened with the uprising. They killed people.
Yeah.
They're given obviously they were trained by the Chinese in Tiananmen Square, but also I don't believe in a lot of the media says this is happening overseas. I think the media 100% of the time lies. But when you have a president who calls for the death of two countries, Israel and us, I don't care if that country has a population of one. You take that seriously and you take it as a threat.
Yeah.
That guy has a nuclear weapon. You take it more than as a threat. He's calling
yeah.
us. And these kind of people would love to wipe off Israel and die. They
yeah.
become, I mean, that, could you imagine this guy dying any other way? He would. This is the way they dream about it. And
yeah.
I mean, we better take these people very seriously because I'm not sure about everyone else. We've had a lot of people through the years talk nonsense. Some of these other people, they back up their play. So, I mean, if I walk up to you, James, and I say, I'm going to kill you, you can either blow it off or take it seriously. When you say you're going to wipe off a country, I take that pretty seriously. And I think Idi Amin said the same thing.
Yeah.
Charles Krauthammer, Fox News contributor, he stated for certain that if it appears as though Barack Obama would be reelected president, then Israel will certainly attack Iran. If it appears as though Obama will be defeated within the next couple of months, then Israel will stand down. They do not believe Netanyahu and the powers that control the Israeli government do not believe that President Obama is a friend to Israel, nor will he aid in the protection of Israel. And they also believe that he is pretty much pandering with regard to Iran possessing nuclear weapons. Now, I also believe that, I believe that if Iran were to develop nuclear weapons, it will simply be a slap in the face to America's prestige and power and our ability to influence the world if they're allowed to possess or create nuclear weapons, and we've said that they shouldn't have them. That simply says that America says to me that America has been weakened as a country. If Ronald Reagan, for example, and we like to talk about Ronald Reagan if all the time, but truly, if Ronald Reagan were president of the United States, we wouldn't even be having these conversations. No nukes for Iran, that's the name of that tune. It's done. It's over. But with this president, and in this date and time where America is weakened both militarily, politically, and economically, Iran feels emboldened. And so do a lot of other countries who don't mean America well. Now, if Iran were to get nuclear weapons, aside from what I just said, they would be foolhardy to use them. No sane person wants to be wiped off the face of the earth. If they were to use nuclear weapons, do they have any doubt that there will not be a retaliation in that country, and in fact, the region, part of the whole, that whole part of the world will cease to exist?
Mm.
Does anybody doubt that we will not retaliate?
No, I think we all believe we'd retaliate, but the flip side of what you're arguing is that if it appears as we get closer to November that there's a chance that Obama will not be reelected, then that lights a fire and creates an urgency for all of these people to act, because it is it's their grace period, and after that I'm sure they assume they'd get a lot tougher treatment from a Romney administration. So it gives them a very narrow window in which to do a bunch of irresponsible, violent things, and I think the intelligence community looks at this as a very dangerous time.
Well, Doc Jones, what I'm thinking of, it would be more like the Reagan effect when he took office during the Iran hostage situation. You notice the day he was being sworn in is the day they released the hostages.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. However, and as much as I like to give my main man Ronald Reagan credit, there are only the two presidents I respect and love most of all. One I got a chance to meet, Reagan, when I was a young Marine officer, and of course Lincoln, whom I didn't, obviously. Reagan, the Iran hostage negotiations and release of the prisoners was a done deal before Reagan took office. But now that you brought this up, Annie, you know what? You're probably I suspect that you hit the nail right on the head. Iran knew that Reagan was going to win the election. They, when it appeared that that Carter was going to lose, that's when Iran decided to negotiate in earnest and release the hostages, and it turned out well. And hopefully history will repeat itself in this case, which history is often, which history often does. But I never really thought of it the way that you just put it, where, and Krauthammer drives the message home when he says that if it appears as though Obama's going to lose, Israel will stand down, but if Obama appears that he's going to win, then our other caller, the gentleman who just spoke, says that it's going to embolden all parties. So, this is all, everybody is right here, I think, and that's unfortunate, really.
Well, keep in mind, too, is that the United States really has no business telling any country you can't have nukes. If you have a president who's talking about killing us, removing us from the face of the planet, so this guy's an idiot. Had he never said anything, they may have developed them without. But I'm not one who likes to stick my nose in other countries' business. But this guy better be taken seriously. And the Stone Age River should be right around over his shoulder. And he better fear for that. Because I have no doubt that this guy would not only use them. There's two places. He'd more than likely go for Israel, obviously. They're a little bit more close. They're a lot closer. But, you know, I would not for one second think that this guy would also try to attempt to hit the Vatican. I mean, if these people hate anybody other than Jews, they hate Catholics.
Well, you know what, here's Mike, and I, you know, I agree with you. The United States of America should not be in the business of telling any other country what sort of weapons they can have and they can't have.
Well, I think we lost Doc Jones. Sounds like his phone cut out.
Doc Jones travels in more places week to week than
hey,
a bird.
Hey, I'm still here.
Oh, you cut out for a second.
We have to stop talking about him then.
Where are
you today, Doc? I'm driving down the road.
We lost him again. So now we can talk about Doc Jones again. Well, you know, James, if a country that is hostile to us tries to develop these weapons of mass destruction, wouldn't it be just only prudent to protect and preserve ourselves and say, hey, listen, you develop that, we're going to be on alert, and then we're going to take you out? Would it not be?
I think we should. I mean, I think we should have done it already. And an earlier America would have found through its intelligence services ways to do this. But because our intelligence service now has to advertise everything on the front page of the Post, it can no longer operate that way. But the assumption is that somehow Iran would just act in a way that would affect Israel, but they would, I mean, my concern would be for domestic terrorism here in the United States. I think that there are already many cells in place, and they just activate them.
That is a true fear. We're down to our last 8 minutes here, James. You know, I really want to thank you for joining us, and I do want you to come back as a guest again. Would you
I'd love to.
That?
Great discussion.
It has fun. Yeah.
I have a question before James goes. James, who are some of your favorite political figures throughout history?
George Washington, number one. George Washington, I think, is the number one. I've just studied, living here in Virginia, it's hard to avoid hearing about him, but I'm just amazed at just how right he was and how appalled he would be at the way this president is behaving. And I think there were many good political leaders. I worked for a couple people like Reagan, who I thought was maybe one of the great presidents. But I've gotten a chance to see a lot of good conservative people like Paul Weyrich here in Washington, who were very active and who really replace the government where the government was falling down. And in the Nixon and Carter administrations, the government fell down regularly. But there are a bunch of them. But the above and beyond everybody is George Washington.
Wow. Yeah. Now, do you think Virginia is going to go for Romney this election?
I think it's going to be very close. I think that it all depends on how well Allen campaigns and how well they do with the turnout here. We are just getting blitzed with robocalls and different campaign visits. Obama is here for the next 2 days, and he's just going from one side of the state to the other. And I hope it does. I mean, I think the impulses here in Virginia are pretty good on this stuff, and my hope would be that that they go for Romney. But, you know, looking at what we've done in the Senate recently with Mark Warner, you know, it's a concern.
Mm. Okay. All right, well, I want to thank you. We're down to our last 5 minutes, so I need to start closing up here. So, James, again, thank you so very much for calling in and being our guest, and I'll be in contact with you and we'll arrange for another show.
Great. I like that.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, Mike. Good to talk with you.
Okay. That was James Lafferty, our guest. And earlier we had Chris Holly, musician from Charleston, South Carolina, who's been on the campaign trail with every single Republican presidential candidate. Next Tuesday, we got a fantastic guest. It's going to be Joe the Plumber, Mike. I got Samuel Wurzelbacher. And I was on the phone with his wife just last night, just reconfirming it. So Joe the Plumber will be here on Tuesday. So we're going to have a rockin' good show. And then later on the 27th, the author Ed Denzel is going to come back. He wrote the book Govicide, which is now out in hardcover. So we'll have Ed Denzel on the 27th. So we're going to have a fantastic thing. Want to remind everyone also, we've got the Lieutenant Dan Weekend number 3 here in South Carolina. That'll be the week of September 9th through the 15th, which culminates in the Lieutenant Dan Band with Gary Sinise performing here in Beaufort, South Carolina. So if anyone's in the area, tickets are only $19 to the event. And we're going to be, we're also going to be broadcasting on September 14th, Friday, from Cat Island again with the veterans, Mike.
Wow.
Yes,
cool.
So we're going to be doing another live broadcast. And people that want information about the weekend, just go to LDW3.com. That's Lieutenant Dan Weekend 3, the number 3.com. And you can make a donation for $5 to help these veterans. And remember, 99 cents on every dollar goes directly to the cause. And they were able to purchase on the last weekend one of those super-duper scooter things I was talking about, those golf kind of things that they can go fishing in and golfing in and everything else for the paraplegic. So they were able to purchase one of these for $23,000. So they raised good money.
That's great, and it's a great cause. All righty, well, everybody have a great weekend. Annie, you have a great weekend. Let's keep our face on the front page, huh?
Oh, yeah, and I want to thank everyone because our last show that we had here on Tuesday with Senate candidate Dan Bongino, we were the number one show here on Blog Talk Radio. You know that? We hit number one. We had more people listening to our show Tuesday through Wednesday than any other BTR show. So stick that up, your obozo. I just stuck it to you. So until then, have a happy, healthy, and safe weekend. And always err on the right side. Have a good weekend, folks, and God bless.
Good afternoon, everybody.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone. American, I've got the heart. American, I've got the will. American, will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.